The world is going through changes. Changes happening at a speed that we have never seen before. This is leading to disruption, chaos, panic, fear, hysteria, and a turbulent economy and marketplace. How do you protect your wealth in a turbulent world? How do you invest for cash flow and alternative assets to escape the rat race in times of uncertainty? How do you decentralize yourself, your family, your community, your business, and your investments to become sovereign and escape the matrix? If you are looking for strategies, tactics, and techniques to escape the rat race and matrix, you are in the right place. My name is MC Lobsher, and this is Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at CashflowNinja.com. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's going on at Cashflow Ninja and get access to our books, our podcasts, our reports, and our courses, you could sign up for our newsletter at CashflowNinja.com/subscribe. I've got a fantastic show for you today. I'm joined by Austin Zellin. Austin, it's great to see you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. We're looking forward to our conversation. For our listeners and viewers that's not familiar with you and what you do and all of the many things that you're involved with, can you please give me a little bit of and share with us a little bit of your background and your journey and what you're up to these days?
Yeah, definitely. I'm doing a little bit of traveling right now. I am involved across several different industries, and I really started out in the corporate world. So I was a consultant for Microsoft for a while. And then during that time, I realized that, well, my job is cool. I like the comfort of it. I like the security of having this job. But at a certain point, you realize that you want to do more with your life, or at least I did. And I wanted to do these things that I was passionate about. And really, I found out that what I was pursuing was freedom, and not just one kind of freedom. Sometimes people say they want financial freedom and they start making a lot of money, but now they have literally no time to enjoy it. And so they're stuck in this situation where they have all the time or all the financial freedom they want, but they don't have time freedom. And I kind of thought about it. And for me, it was three types of freedom. Number one is financial freedom, make enough money to do whatever I want. Secondly was time freedom. Do it whenever I want to. If I want on a Tuesday afternoon to be in Vegas, Tuesday morning, like today, I can be in Vegas, you know? And the third one is geographical freedom. I can work from wherever I want, whenever I want, and do whatever I want with whoever I want. So really that kind of encompasses all the freedoms that we pursue as humans, I believe. And whether we express it as something like, I want a good job, or I want to make $100,000 passively, or I want to be an investor, that's really at the core of what we're pursuing. So for me, I realized that while I was working there, and I started investing into different things. And so my first investment was actually into the Forex market. Now, you know, Forex is kind of a taboo subject. There's a lot of like scammers out there and stuff like that. But for me, it was a real vehicle that gave me an opportunity to break out of the 9-to-5. And that was like, I call it my great escape. You know, I went there and I studied the charts, and I would stay up all night sometimes trying to figure out what the heck the market is doing. And I realized that the only way you can really become an expert, I guess, at the market is understanding that you have to look at it from a third person point of view. What does the market look like it's doing? What do they want you to think that it's doing? And then you need to analyze that from a third person point of view so that you could anticipate what actually is going to happen. So for me, that was a big discovery that allowed me to have the income to leave my job. And so from there, I actually automated this whole process. I hired a team of coders, and they took my strategy and they coded it into a bot that would trade automatically. And so from there, I didn't want to risk my own money on it. So I thought, I'm like, how can I do this in a way that doesn't put my entire salary at risk, doesn't put like, you know, my rent, all that stuff at risk. So I went out and I got credit cards, and I got as many credit cards as I could. And I got about maybe $45,000, and I put all of that money into the software. And now I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll either owe a bunch of money to the bank. You know, I'm like 18, 19 years old. Or I'll make a bunch of money, whatever. Like, I'll still have time to make it back in the future. So I just went all in. And by the end of the year, I had that account grew very, very significantly, like many, many multiples of what it was at the beginning. And so for me, that was my jumpstart into realizing that, okay, I could actually make this into a business. So long story short, started licensing that software out even to my previous colleagues at Microsoft and the consulting firm and people that I knew. And that business really, really took off. And at a certain point, I realized that all my money was coming from this one thing. So between me and having to go back to a job was just one barrier. And that was this one thing. If this something ever happened to this one thing, I would be screwed and I'd have to go back to a job. And I really didn't want that. So I started thinking, okay, how can I protect my investor status as a full-time investor? I never want to go back to 9 to 5, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that doesn't happen. And so I started building what I call a financial moat around myself of just passive income investments that I didn't really have to be involved in, but that would protect me from ever having to go back to a job. So that kind of became my obsession over the last few years. And I started focusing on that and doing everything I could. So I started investing into different things. Now, I've kind of built over time a portfolio of things that I've found to be successful, tried many things, I've failed at many things, and some things have succeeded. And so luckily the winners were bigger than the losers. And I was able to kind of craft this portfolio that I'm now hyper-focused on, probably about 10 different things that I invest in. And I just scale them. So I keep reinvesting and reinvesting, and occasionally I'll add a new investment. But for the most part, I've kind of figured out what I want to do and why I want to do it.
One of the things that I find fascinating that you're involved with is private aviation, the private jet kind of niche. Yeah. So when did you get involved in the private aviation, the private jet niche, and what attracted you to this, and how did you get your start there?
Yeah, man, it's a crazy story. So we actually, we came back from a trip. I don't remember where exactly, but I remember I was not dressed for this at all. I was like very underdressed. I was very tired, was not looking forward to this at all. And we came to the airport because one of my friends, a family friend, works at the airport. And he was just working as like, head of some cleaning department or something, just like cleaning jets. And so he works at this company. He's like, oh, the CEO of the company is here. I want to introduce you. And I'm like, dude, look at how I'm dressed. I'm not going to go meet the CEO of a company. Like, I'm really not up for this right now. He's like, no. I promise. Let's just go do it. He's super chill, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, cool. And at this point, I'm already doing these different investments. We were doing exotic car rentals. We were doing like vacation rentals, all that type of stuff. And so I don't know what happened, man. As I was walking into that room, like this idea hit me, private jet automation. And so I walk into that room and I just blurt out. I'm like, hey, man, I want to partner with you on private jet automation. And he's looking at me. He's like, what are you talking about? And I'm looking at him like, oh, crap, now I got to explain it. So the idea hit me spontaneously. And I'm like, yeah, so basically it's the same model as we're doing with exotic cars. We'll buy a jet, maybe one investor, maybe multiple. Then we'll charter it out through your company like you're already doing. And then we'll pay out the profits to the investors after, of course, your management fee and all that stuff. And he's like, oh, that's actually a good idea. But he totally did not believe me. Again, I did not look the part at all. I looked like some kid walking into his office, and he's like, yeah, for sure, we'll do it. Didn't believe me at all. And about a year later, we had our first jet. So it was kind of a very interesting journey on how that happened. And that was probably, I think, about 3 years ago at this point. Yeah. And so since then, we've continued down that path and continued raising for other jets and stuff like that. And so the model that we use is usually some sort of partnership, or we have a singular investor. Like, we have people come in who have maybe $1 million, and that's enough for a down payment, you know? So somebody has $1 million, $2 million, they put it down as a down payment on a jet, we finance it, and then we're able to charter it out through this company. And, you know, we've seen returns. I think the last jet that we bought is doing about 30% a year. So very significant, you know, and on top of that, it's also getting paid off. So month after month, the jet is building up equity as well. You could count that as profits, but just net cash flow, probably about 30%.
So tell me a little bit about the private aviation and private jet industry and what's going on there, because for our listeners and our viewers, it's quite an interesting world, been exposed to it in some way, shape, or form. Different airports, obviously, that this is using. It's a different world. You park your car, you walk in. Sometimes you show a driver's license, you know, if they don't know you, if you're with parties and you're on board and you're off. And then, of course, it lands at a different airport. and the pilot waits until you're ready to go again, and you pull up and you pull off. So it's a different world, it's a different life, but it's fascinating. Private jet aviation is really spiked, like in the past like 3 years, especially since 2020, because there's a lot of people that just said, I'm not dealing with any of this nonsense. I mean, it was already almost unbearable to fly commercial before that, and then after the events of 2020, it just became even worse, right? So a lot of people have made an effort to get into this some way, shape, or form. And there's so much innovation going on there. I mean, all these rideshare kind of like platforms that have now taken off, the Uber jets, you know, and Tap jets, and all these different type of companies. So yeah, if you don't mind, just give me like a little bit of an overview, and then what's going on there in that industry.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the jet industry has, I would say, doubled or maybe even tripled in the last 3 years. And the spend is just astronomically high right now because people have realized, it's kind of interesting. It was all mostly provoked by the pandemic. So people started flying private. And then once you fly private, you just kind of get ruined. Like, it's very hard to fly even first class because, to be honest, you're getting corralled like cattle at the airport, you know? And I know it's kind of an interesting thing to say, but like once you, like, I don't mean this in any weird way, but like once you try it out, like you'll see what I mean. And once you fly private, once you're like, oh, okay, like this actually makes a lot more sense than flying commercial. And the closest comparison that I found is if you're flying commercial, it's kind of like taking the bus. You're on their time. When it says the bus is going to get there, you get on the bus with everybody else and you take it, you know? But when you fly private, it's like having your own car. It's like, oh, it's 1 a.m. and I want to go to California right now. Sweet. Let's just fire up the jet and let's go, you know? And like you said, they wait for you. You know, it's not, you're not on their schedule, they're on your schedule. And we've, you know, we've seen that happen multiple times. Even sometimes we're running a little bit late from one meeting to another, and you need that flexibility, you know, because the plane is there waiting for you, the pilot's there, you show up when you show up because it's your flight and it's your plane. So that flexibility, I would say, is a huge game changer. Now, you do have to consider that it is significantly more expensive to fly private. Like, for example, if I'm flying, I live in Seattle, Washington, and if I want to fly to Vegas, it's about a 2.5 hour flight. If I want to do that flight on a jet, it's going to be probably about $25,000 or so, $30,000. And that's a great rate to own part of that company. But if I wanted to fly commercial, I could probably get here for like $500 or $1,000, first class even, you know? So it is a huge difference. So for me, I definitely encourage people to take a look at what is the value of that time, or how necessary is that flexibility? Because sometimes it just doesn't make sense, you know? And I have billionaire friends who, you know, they won't take their jet sometimes because it would cost them $200,000 to fly somewhere and back, whereas they could just fly commercial on the nicest airline, nicest flights, everything. And it's okay for them. So it really is personal preference and how you want to do it. But for important meetings, I won't hesitate to take a private jet, because for me, that meeting and that timing and that person is more important than the money that I might spend. And so it really is just a matter of scheduling and flexibility and having that, taking back that control of your time. So anyways, yeah, that is how it works. It's pretty cool. Like you said, it is usually an executive airport. So you're not flying out of the main airport. There's not really much going on at these airports, just probably jets coming down and taking off. And it's like the airport looks very different. It's not really an airport. It's called an FBO. So you go in there and they have usually like snacks and drinks and stuff like that, maybe coffee. And you just check in and there's no TSA or anything. You're usually in the air within 15 minutes, you know, unless you're waiting on somebody. But yeah, sometimes they even check your ID. But for the most part, if you're flying with somebody that you know, it's literally you just walk to the plane and you take off within 15 minutes, which is great, you know, and it's a much more convenient process. So that's one thing that I like about it. The industry is growing for that reason. It's that accessibility. It's that being able to take control of your time and decide when you're going to show up somewhere or when you're going to leave. I think that's the biggest thing for people.
I want to take a moment to share something very important right now. Are you trying to figure out how to protect your savings from the banking collapse, which has already started, and the coming financial crisis. Most banks will fail. Deposits that are not insured by the FDIC will be lost, and there will be bank bail-ins. And this collapse in the banking system will lead to chaos in the financial system. Banks also provide loans to real estate investors. So what do you think is going to happen to lending in the event of a banking and a financial crisis? You can be proactive and position your savings to protect it and also have access to it to use it to buy discounted assets by positioning it in your own banking system through the infinite banking concept strategy. Producers Wealth has put together a presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com where you will learn how to position capital outside of the banking system and the Wall Street casino, just like the ultra wealthy, to protect it and create a pool of tax-free liquid capital to capitalize on the massive opportunity to buy discounted assets, which is coming. You can access the presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. So the players on the in the industry, because yeah, there's a huge uptick in private aviation and private jets and traveling. Who are some of the players? Do you have like your big companies? And then you have your smaller companies. Like if you can share a little bit about that and what's going on, the dynamics, where does all the players fit in? And there's also maybe if you could touch too, there's different size of jets, right? So I knew you threw out a number there of like, hey, it would take 25,000 from like A to B in this type of length of flight. But there's different size flight planes too, you know, with different prices and so forth. Maybe you could share a little bit more on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So as far as the players in the game, one thing that I will say is there are larger companies trying to compete in this industry. And I think they have a bit of a silly approach to it. And you'll see some of them are going out of business. You know, even this year, several of them have gone out of business because they'll go out and they'll buy a brand new jet. And well, first of all, they raise a bunch of capital. They have too much capital. They don't know what to do with it. There are not enough used jets on the market for them to buy. So they're buying them brand new and they're buying a bunch of them brand new. And then these jets are depreciating so aggressively that they're not always able to be profitable on them. And so they're also their strategy, their pricing strategy is to attempt to kind of bully the smaller companies like us. And they want to undercut our prices. So they're kind of screwing everybody else by undercutting prices, but they're not even profitable on many of these jets. So for example, one thing that they do is like a free repositioning flight. Now, not every company does this, but a repositioning flight is, let's say you are in LA and you need to go to San Francisco, right? Very short flight, just up north, maybe an hour, maybe less. And this flight, normally it's fine if they have a jet in that place, but sometimes they'll include a guarantee that, oh, if you're a person of this status, we'll make sure that you have a jet within X amount of time, even if we don't have any jets in that area. I think they usually give themselves like 12 to 24 hours. Now, let's say for some reason there are no jets in LA and the closest jet is in Miami. So they're going to cover the cost of that jet flying from Miami to LA to pick you up for that 1 hour flight. And you do that enough times and you start really being not profitable. And so that has happened many times. There's not enough jets to service all these clients. The demand is growing very, very quickly. And on top of that, they're buying brand new jets, which is fine. But again, they depreciate. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on there that is a little bit imbalanced economically. And that's why some of them are going out of business. Now, as far as the price of the flight that I mentioned, that is an 8-seater plane. That would be like a Hawker 800 or something. And yes, there are different types of planes. So for example, our cheapest jet that we charter out is about, I believe, $3,500 or $4,000 an hour. That's like the cheapest one. And that would be something, it depends on what it is actually, but that could be like a Learjet 35 or something. And so we're able to get these costs pretty low. We're very competitive. But then you start getting into larger jets and you have maybe like a Gulfstream. So we took a Gulfstream with our investors. One of the things, by the way, that I have for my investors is that when they invest, they're invited to our private jet mastermind. So that's part of the experience. They get to come hang out with the other jet investors, hang out with me. We usually go to the Bahamas or something. And so one of the times we took a G5. And so when we took that G5, that was maybe $10,000 an hour or $12,000 an hour. And that's a pretty typical price for it, you know? So depends on the size of the jet, depends on how much fuel it's burning, but that is mostly driven by the cost of jet fuel to get there. So depending how much you're burning per hour, that's going to dictate price. So the smaller the jet, the cheaper it is usually. But again, you don't have the same comforts as you would with a larger jet. A Gulfstream G5 would fit, you know, 12, 13 people, whereas something smaller is going to be a little bit more cramped. Some people are okay with that, but you know, a G5 has a bed on it. So that's kind of the difference.
Gotcha. So big players, I mean, there's what, like NetJets is a big name. Those are the bigger companies. And then you've got smaller kind of like chartered companies where you have private investors that buy planes and invest together through syndications. And then they get then leased or rented out for flights, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the bigger players, like you said, NetJets, Blade does some private jets. You have like Wheels Up, XO, stuff like that. So those are kind of the larger players. And then you have the smaller charter companies. A lot of them are actually just brokers. So there's a lot of brokers out there who are like, oh yeah, I can get you a private jet, no problem. But really they don't have any jets. They're just brokering it out from somebody like us. And they're like, okay, Austin, how much can I get this jet for? And I'll tell them, let's say, you know, $3,000 an hour or $5,000 an hour. And then they'll upcharge it a little bit. And they'll be like, oh yeah, to the customer, it's $5,500 or $6,000 an hour. And so that's kind of where they make their money, which is fine. You know, but that would be like a dry lease. And so we have also done that if we don't have a jet in the area. For example, I had a client who needed a flight in Europe somewhere, and we don't have any jets in Europe right now, but we have a very vast network in Europe. And so we were able to connect them same day. We're a lot quicker than most companies as far as that is concerned and as far as getting access to jets because of our network. So yeah, there are smaller players. There's a very big concentration of jets in like Dallas area. And we're headquartered right now in Tampa, Florida, but we are looking to move to Dallas because it's such a nice central location where you could basically get anywhere in the United States from Dallas without having to refuel, even if you're taking like a mid-sized jet, like a Hawker 800, something like that. And that's a reasonable price. You know, it's a lot of people opt for a jet like that because they're not having to spend a ton of money and they're still getting where they want whenever they want.
So what are some of the benefits for investors? Why do people invest in these private aviation syndications? What's some of the benefits that they can get?
Yeah, well, there's probably, I'd say, four major benefits. So the first one is that you're investing into a physical asset. You know, as I've shared a little bit earlier, I started out in the non-physical asset space and I was investing into Forex. Well, Forex, you can't touch and feel and see. Like, I can't go take a picture with my Forex. Like, it's a market, you know? And so you don't have any tangible asset. Whereas here, you do. And one big benefit of that is if I buy this asset, it's worth something. It has intrinsic value. So even if I bought this jet, and I usually buy them after they've kind of depreciated. But as an example, if you buy a $9, $10 million jet, it's going to depreciate down to probably about 4 or 5 million, and it'll settle at that price point. It's not going to go much lower. So if you look at the market, you'll see that you can't really buy that model of jet for less than 4 million or so. And so for me, that's like a safety net because I know that people are valuing this jet at so much that they could even part it out for probably about $4 million if they just wanted to sell it for parts. So that's why price settles there, and that value is contained there. It's always going to be a valuable asset. Now, the second benefit of that is that we know that if something happens and maybe we can't charter the jet as much as we thought we could, or we decide to move into another direction, we can just sell off that asset. It's not an investment like, oh, I'm going to invest in crypto and it could go to zero. No, we have a safety net here. And if we were to sell it, let's say we buy the jet, charter it for a year, we don't really like it, we sell it, we'd probably get most of our money back, if not all of it. And we've actually had cases where we sold it for more than what we bought it for, because that huge uptick in demand has driven prices through the roof. They're literally like doubling, tripling prices of jets. It's crazy. So even a small increase in price from where we bought it from four is a win for sure. So that's one thing I like about it, one big benefit, because we own the physical asset and worst case scenario, we could just sell it. Secondly, there are definitely huge, huge tax breaks that are attached to this. So if you look up Part 135 operations, that's operations of like a charter, all the expenses that are attributed to that are tax write-offs. And you can actually write the whole jet off in the first year. So according to the tax law, you're able to do that in the first year, or you can spread it out across a longer period of time if you wanted to. But most of our investors opt to just do it the first year. They want a tax break, so they buy a jet and they start making some passive income. Thirdly, one thing that I like about the payout side of it, so the next number three, number four related to payouts. So you have equity building and you have cash flow. And what I've realized through my experience is that if I just have cash flow, like I did with Forex, I'm not really building wealth. I'm never going to be able to be fully safe. If my cash flow ever stopped, that's it. That's the end of my passive income investor status. Now, the flip side of that, if I just have equity in something, I could own 50% of a huge company, but if I'm not getting any money out of it, no cash flow, I still have to work a job. I could be a billionaire on paper, but still have to work a 9-to-5 somewhere just because I need cash flow. So you really need both. So equity builds generational wealth. You need to have something where you're building equity, and you also need to have cash flow to support your day-to-day expenses and that lifestyle. So it's really a blend of the two that you need. And for me, I think jets is the perfect thing for that, because when we buy that jet, we're buying it on margin. So we're basically putting like 20% down. So let me run you through an example of what our target is. Let's say we're buying a $5 million jet. It's depreciated from 10 to 5. We're like, okay, perfect. This is the time to buy. So we put $1 million down, which is 20%. And we finance the rest. So if somebody invested, let's say $100,000 into this, they would own approximately 10%. It's actually a little bit less, but let's say it's 10% for the sake of the example. So they invest $100,000, which is 10%. And as this jet is cash flowing month after month after month, we've never had a not profitable month, by the way. This company has been around for, I don't know, 15, 16 years doing charters. And we've never had a not profitable month for investors. So with that, they're making money every single month. They're getting a certain percentage, and that can vary. Our target is usually 20 to 30, maybe 40%, depending on the jet, a year. And on top of that, every month, we're also paying off the debt on the plane. So the bank is getting payments. We're building up equity month after month after month. And at a certain point, that jet is going to be paid off. So you're really buying $5 million worth of jet for $1 million. And you just have to wait a little bit of time and the charters will pay it off. And then that plane is paid off and you have a $5 million asset. So even if you didn't make any money every single month on the net cash flow, like you could literally just break even every month, you still like, what is that? Quintupled your money. Made five times your money at the end of the term. So it's a very safe investment from that perspective, but it actually gets better. And this is like my favorite part of it all. When investors come in on a jet like that and they own, let's say 10%, now we have a $5 million asset. We sell that $5 million asset and we do that process all over again. And they're grandfathered in at that 10%. So that $5 million, we can put it down as a 20% down payment on a $25 million jet. So really, now they own 10% of a $25 million jet and their $100,000 becomes worth about $2.5 million. So about a 2,500% return, and it's through physical assets. That's the best part. These things don't go to zero. There's insurance coverage. There's everything. Even if something were to break, we have the insurance. We have the maintenance set aside every month. So it's really, really well thought out to the point where we've never had a capital call and we've never had a not profitable month.
I want to acknowledge one of our sponsors. Are you ready to ride the wave of success in the booming car wash industry? Tommy's Express Car Wash is the cutting-edge brand that is revolutionizing the way we clean vehicles. Demand for top-notch, state-of-the-art tunnel car wash is skyrocketing. Institutions are diving in headfirst, and the real asset investor is already a step ahead. They have a world-class operations team, and they're building a portfolio of Tommy's Express car washes that's on track to become one of the largest privately owned car wash portfolios in the United States. The margins on a stabilized Tommy's Express car wash are incredible, and accredited investors have the chance to join them on their adventure. Dave Zook, the founder and CEO of The Real Asset Investor, and his team are thrilled to share opportunities like Tommy's Car Wash with accredited investors that boost your cash flow, unlocks massive tax benefits, and get you set up for a lucrative exit just a few years from now. To learn more about the opportunities offered by The Real Asset Investor, you can reach out to them at info@therealassetinvestor.com. That's info@therealassetinvestor.com. So you had mentioned 15 years this company's been around. So this is a company that you've also bought into, right? Where you guys put this together. So it's, you know, investors get to invest in the private jet, specific, you know, allocated ones. You know exactly which one it is. And then you have this charter company, which is the business that you bought into that's been around for 15 years, right? Then they manage, maintain insurance, all the other stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah. I'm by no means a private jet expert. I'm just on the investor side. I like passive income investments, and this thing has been working for me. So I shared it with my community, and other people wanted to hop into it. So they did, and they started investing into stuff like this. And we teach that whole process. We've actually had people come into the program, and the first thing they do is raise capital. So we show them how to get money from the bank. They get a bunch of money from the bank, and then they start investing into different investments, including the jet. So I've literally had people who are broke came into the program. They just had just enough to cover the cost of the program. They got a bunch of money from the bank, and then they used that money to invest into the jet. So now they're building equity, and they're also cash flowing every month. So yes, you're correct. That company that's been around for 15 years, I actually think it's more like 16 or 17. I don't remember the exact year of incorporation, but I did buy into that company. So I'm a majority shareholder of that company. We're working on changing the name to Zelen Aviation right now. It's not fully changed. We worked at that company for, I think, like 3 years now. And again, very close with the owners. I'm a partner there now. And we have leveraged their certificate, because you need to have a special licensing and certificate for these charters. And they've got a lot of great things going for them. Great infrastructure, the best certificate with all the bells and whistles you could possibly get. We can operate around the world up to 25 passengers, which is like the best of the best. People have tried to buy our company just because of the certificate, by the way. Like, we get offers all the time. And on top of that, we also have very close ties with the FAA and stuff like that. So we're able to get a lot of these jets on certificate in-house. We don't have to go apply to the FAA. We don't have to do all that stuff because we have a contact from that entity.
So a certificate, I'm guessing, is almost like a liquor license for a bar, right? It depends on the quality of the license that you have, what you can carry and what you can sell, and, you know, and so forth. So this certificate that you have allows you to operate in jurisdictions all over the world, and then, you know, certain types of planes and so forth.
Yeah. It's called an air charter certificate. So they have some that are just maybe like 10 passengers max, or like a certain area. Like, there's very basic ones. And then you have like the really fancy good ones that we have. So like, if we were just to sell our certificate, we could sell it with no company for probably, I don't know, $5 million. Because nobody's getting certificates right now. It's very difficult to do that. A lot of companies came and went. There's a lot of like under the radar fly-by-night guys who are operating without a certificate, and they would pay a lot of money for our certificate. So, we get offers for it all the time. We're in a very fortunate position to have that and to be licensed and to be fully above board. And that's why we've been able to scale like this.
So what are some of the risks, right? How does this go wrong? Because every single investment, obviously there's some risk involved, and there's some variables that aren't even really controllable. But you can manage it through proper risk management. What are some of the risks that you see in the private aviation and private jet space?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in any scenario, there's unlimited risks in any possible way. Like, we can't predict everything that could happen. But the worst thing that I've seen happen is a loss of revenue. Now, it doesn't mean we were negative for the month. We were still positive, but we had a major loss of revenue because a bird hit a wing of the plane and it left a huge dent. And insurance coverage or not, yeah, it was covered by insurance, but we had to wait for it, you know? Yep. So basically it's like, it's really a risk of time and like delays and stuff like that. Sometimes there's a delay, like we'll raise all the capital and then we don't close on the jet for several months because of whatever. And then we have to like refurbish the jet, and then we have to like get new upholstery and new paint and all that stuff. And sometimes that takes months. So for me, out of my experience, that's been the biggest risk. And then of course, if you have some sort of damage, like we also had a bird hit a windshield. So it hit the windshield, like it cracked it. It wasn't like horrible, but again, you have to wait for the windshield and stuff like that. And that it costs money. And so it's really like downtime, I'd say, is the biggest risk. But again, we're not buying these brand new, you know? So I think the majority of the risk is taking a financial loss. But I think we've hedged that or hedged against that very, very effectively by buying these where they've depreciated to the basically the maximum point. They're not really going to depreciate more. And you'll see this, by the way, I don't know how if you've ever looked into this, but if you look at luxury cars, for example, Mercedes, yep, BMW, they'll just like depreciate to zero. But if you go a little bit higher and you go to exotic cars, they hold their value amazing well. Like you couldn't go buy a Lamborghini Huracan for less than like 180,000 or 200,000. You know what I mean? That's just kind of like, once it gets to that level, there's huge demand there. Once it gets just below 180, it'll get snatched right up. It just doesn't go below that level. Why? Well, because it has value. That car contains value, you know? And so it's very interesting because it's like wealthy people have access to these things. You go buy a fancy house on the beach, it's not going to depreciate in value. That it's just going to grow in demand, you know? The more expensive these assets are, the more they tend to just grow and grow and grow in value. If you look at one of the most expensive real estate markets in the world, Monaco, in the last, well, like 90 years, it's never gone down. It's only plateaued a couple times. When the rest of the world was burning to ashes, they only plateaued. Why? Because it's the most desirable market to be in the world. And these are trophy assets. And so really what we try to focus on here is trophies. We're not buying the cheapest jet. We're not buying some crap. We're buying something that is so valuable that we know it's not going to go down in value.
Yeah, this is like assets for the 0.01%, what you're saying. So those are trophy assets that hold value. And they, yeah. I mean, this is it's a completely different world than what the rest of the world plays in, right? Usually, even in the luxury space, I've seen is where it's the upper middle class. Those are the folks that get absolutely hammered because it's not quite trophy it's not trophy assets. It is expensive, mm-hmm, and it is in the ultra affluent space, but there's still like, I mean, if there's an economic hit or a recession, you still get clobbered around there, right? But the 0.01%. Not so much. Real estate in Monaco, those folks are not really affected that much by a recession, where if you buy, you know, where ultra affluent, let's just say in that kind of bracket, you still feel economic pain. So it's fascinating. Yeah. It's a different world.
Yeah, definitely. And I totally agree with you. Like those are the people that are taking the majority of the hit, you know, because the poor people, they can't even afford to spend enough to take a big hit. And then you have these people who are in middle class or reaching just a little bit above their means and buying things that are expensive, brand new, like I said, BMW, it'll go literally down to zero. It's crazy. And those are the things that are taking the biggest depreciation hits. But as soon as you get just above that to like the exotic space or like fine art, like another thing is fine art. It just doesn't go down in value, it just goes up, you know? So I look above anything, I look for exclusivity and unattainability of these assets, because that usually means that it's a trophy asset.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Life Settlements Investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the billion-dollar blueprint followed by institutional investors. If you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/life settlements. Live settlements. The password to access that webinar is Penumbra, all lowercase.
And another thing that I also wanted to share, like in this, because folks might be their heads might be exploding. This is great. Great learning, you know, a lot that I've witnessed too. And this is stories that you can look up. But like I think it was Mark Cuban that wanted to buy a private jet, right? And then he's like, well, how do I buy a private jet, but I don't really see it, have it on my books as a liability? How can I turn that into an asset? Well, then it comes to, well, I gotta start a charter company. And instead of buying one, I have to buy a couple now, right? And I think Robert Kiyosaki did the same thing when he wanted a boat out in Hawaii to go and sail. And he's like, well, if I buy one boat, it's on my book as a liability. What am I going to do with that? Well, if I buy like two or three or four boats, well, now I have a charter, a boat company that I can then lease my boat out for the day and, you know, make money and have this now as assets, just like Mark Cuban had the charter jet company as an asset on his books, generating income for them and providing great tax benefits, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's it's all about how you position it. So there's smart ways to play it, and you'll be surprised. There are so many tax breaks for purchases like that. You know, like you said, yachts and jets and stuff like that, that's all a huge tax write-off for them anyways. So on top of it being an asset, they're also getting a big tax break.
Yeah. So we talk a lot about business. We talk about investing. We talk about cash flow. We talk about appreciation, taxes, and so forth on the show. But we also talk a lot about legacy and leaving a legacy. So I always ask our first-time guest, if you cannot pass on any money to future generations and you're only allowed mm-hmm. to pass on three principles or values to them to help them achieve success and build wealth, what would they be?
Three principles, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. You know, I think that one of the biggest things for me was, and as cheesy as it sounds, it's like thinking bigger. You know, so I would definitely encourage the next generation to think bigger, because whatever you think becomes like your, it's kind of like a mold. And if you're going to fill in the mold, you decide how big that mold is just by how big you think. And so the bigger you think, it really takes the same amount of work to get from here to here, whether you're thinking up here, you're thinking here, or lower. It's the same amount of work, but because of your frame of mind and your mindset, you can go up to a higher plane. You can jump up to a higher plane of thinking. And at that plane, if you do the same amount of work, you're still going to achieve that goal. So that was a big one for me. And like, I had heard that all my life. You know, people always told me, oh yeah, think big, like dream big. And it just sounds cheesy at a certain point. You're just like, wow, like this is, you know, that's silly. Don't even say that to me anymore. But then it hit me for real one day. And I was like, oh, like, wow, I didn't even realize I started thinking bigger. And now I'm doing the same amount of work. My day looks exactly the same, but I'm achieving 10 times more, 10 times more finances, 10 times more this, 10 times more that. And that's been really big for me. The second one that I would say is, and this has been massive, massive, massive for me, both in company growth and also like in my personal life, is the speed from idea to execution, I would say is 99% of the problem. Because people will have an idea and they'll never execute on it. And it actually, it brings me back to my college days. One of my professors, this was like, I think entrepreneurship class or something like that. And the first thing he says, everybody comes into the class, he says, I don't care what you guys think, but your ideas are worthless. And I was a little offended. I was like, what is this guy talking about? Like, he doesn't know what ideas I have. You know, like, how could he possibly say they're worthless? But it really makes a lot of sense, because you can have all the ideas in the world, but if you never take that first step, you're never going to achieve anything. And that idea truly is worthless. Anybody can have an idea. I wonder how many people had an idea for, you know, we talked a little bit about Uber. How many people had an idea for Uber? Probably thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people had that idea of starting Uber, but then only one executed. And so that is huge in entrepreneurship. It's that speed from idea to execution. And I always look for ways to shorten that. I never want to have a barrier, whether it's financial, whether it's mental, whatever it is. I never want to have a barrier between when I have an idea and I do it. I try to do it the same day. And then that kind of carries on to step two of that, is you have to have a team. Like for me, I'm an idea guy. I have the ideas. I start it, I get it rolling, but then I need to have people in there that are helping me keep the ball rolling and continue pushing it and running it. So somebody to manage it. So you have to learn that skill set to complement your ideas. It's like, okay, I have the ideas, but I need to learn how to hire good managers to operate them. And so that's why I've been able to start multiple businesses and stuff like that, because I just have a very awesome team. And you have to usually overpay them, but you know, it's worth it because they're running these ideas for you. And then thirdly, I would say a huge thing is environment, at least for me. And I've had to purposefully separate myself from certain environments, certain rooms, and specifically put myself into the rooms that I want to be in. So I find people who are far more successful than I am. I find ways to get around them. And truthfully, like you know, sometimes people get a little bit upset about this, but like, I will pay to be in those rooms. And usually the first time I'm in that room, I have to pay there. I have to pay to be there. If I want to be around, you know, let's say Damon John, the first time I met him, I had to pay. I had to pay him to come speak at my event. I called him. He said, yeah, $70,000 to come speak at your event. You know, if I want to be around him, I'm going to have to pay to play. But now I'm in contact with him. And so if I'm able to provide value, if I'm able to find something that that person needs and help them with it, or you know, just in general, be a valuable person to be around, you'll likely get invited back. You know, but that first time, people don't really know who you are. Maybe they don't really like, they've never heard of you or whatever it is. Don't hesitate to pay to play, at least for the first time. And from there, you start making connections and all that stuff. And it's always been a very great investment into my own mind, into my own mindset, is being around these people.
Awesome. Awesome. Austin, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can folks learn more about you? Where can they follow you? And where can they stay informed of all of the many projects that you're involved with?
Yeah. So my biggest content hub is going to be Instagram. So it's at Austin Zelin. So A-U-S-T-I-N, last name Z-E-L-A-N. And that's where I post almost all of my content. I do a pretty big mix of like personal content and business content on that page. But I do have another page, Dr. Zelin, which I just started to just post like podcast reels and stuff like that. So if that's the content you're looking for, I definitely go to Dr. Zelin. But Austin Zelin has everything.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much again for coming on and providing so much value for my listeners and my viewers. It's been great to connect.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate you.
And thank you to all of my listeners and viewers for, again, spending your most valuable resource, your time, with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's going on at Cashflow Ninja and access all of our books, our podcasts, our reports, and our courses, you could go to cashflowninja.com/subscribe to subscribe to our newsletter. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.